Well, today we continue our series called The Chosen. It's about what it means to be chosen by God. As we've been saying, God chooses us for his purposes, to live according to his plan and not our own. And so far, we've said that God calls us to make his love known into the world, to reveal him in the world, to make his love known, that he also chooses us to obey him, to follow him and obey him when he calls us to do something great for him, even though it might be hard. We also said that we're chosen to live by unconventional values in a community centered around Christ. Those values are embodied in the Beatitudes. And then last week, we talked about how we have been chosen to go out into the world to add value to the world by being salt and light. If you think back about 5 weeks ago, we began our series with what we said is our most fundamental and basic calling, and that is to be holy. Holiness can create a lot of confusion for people because it conjures up images of, you know, dour-faced saints. Some people, when they hear the word holy, they immediately think of judgmental, holier-than-thou believers. For others, holiness may seem like an impossible, a good goal, but an impossible or unrealistic goal. But holiness literally just means being set apart for God or for some religious purpose. Anything that is set apart for God can be holy. Objects can be holy. Holy water, for example, is just ordinary water that has been blessed and set apart solely for God's purposes. You wouldn't water your plants with it. You wouldn't take a bath in it, at least I hope. Time also can be holy. Sundays, for example, should be set aside and dedicated to God in a special way. I know that's hard these days, but that's the intent. You know, attend Mass, spend time with your family and loved ones, pray a little bit more than on other days, reflect on your life. Sundays should not be like, just like the other days of the week. Certain places also can be considered to be holy, a church or a chapel, a small prayer area in your home, or a Catholic cemetery. These are all sacred spaces that should be treated with special reverence and respect because they've been set aside for religious purposes. And I know it's sometimes hard to believe, but people also can be holy. People are holy when they've been set apart for God. The ancient Israelites, long ago, were called by God to be holy. While they were wandering in the desert trying to find the promised land, God told them this in Exodus chapter 19, "You shall be my special possession, dearer to me than all the other people on the earth. You shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation." Israel had been called to be holy and set apart from the other nations, which is why the Jews have always been known as God's chosen people. In being chosen, their role was to be an example of holiness for the rest of the world. They were to be God's faithful servants. Isaiah puts it this way when speaking for God. He says, "I formed you, Israel, and set you as a covenant of the people, a light for the nations." Light, the light of holiness for all the other nations of the world. They were to set the example for everyone else because, in truth, holiness is for everyone. Even though you might not think you're holy, and even though I might not think I'm holy. When people are holy, when you and I struggle to be holy, it just means that we try in our everyday lives to live for God alone, to dedicate our work, our family activities, our relationships, our finances, our leisure time, dedicate that to God in honor of him, to do only God-honoring things. Sometimes, though, it's easy to forget that holiness isn't just for ourselves. Holiness doesn't stop with our private, personal relationship with God. Holiness is supposed to produce something good for the world, which is what Jesus spent a great deal of time teaching his disciples. In the gospel story today, for example, Jesus begins by speaking to his disciples about the scribes and the Pharisees. The Pharisees were a specific sect of Jewish rabbis, and the scribes were the scholars of the law. They knew the law inside and out. And both the Pharisees and the scribes were respected by the people. But the Pharisees in particular held themselves out as models of holiness. If you've seen the first episode of the TV series, The Chosen, which is where our trailer for the homily series comes from, and the name, we called it Chosen after the TV series. If you've seen that first episode, you see that picture there, you know that the high-ranking Pharisee named Nicodemus, he came to Capernaum, a village along the Sea of Galilee, and when he got there, he gathered all the students studying to be rabbis, and he tells them that God has entrusted them to be exemplary in every way, to be an example of holiness for others. Indeed, the Pharisees were known, they were known for their personal piety, their careful attention to the law of Moses, and as a result, they were considered to be some of the spiritual elite of Jewish society. And they were not shy, as I just said, they were not shy about holding themselves out as such. But in speaking to his disciples, Jesus says something surprising. He says, I tell you, unless your righteousness surpasses that of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. That's confusing, isn't it? Seems like there's a difference between holiness and righteousness. The Pharisees had been called to be holy, and the way the Pharisees lived and studied and dressed signaled to everyone that they had, in fact, set themselves aside for God and his purposes. But what Jesus was pointing out is that the Pharisees, while perhaps holy, were definitely not righteous. And the rest of the passage helps us to get a better grasp of the difference between holiness and righteousness. In the passage, Jesus goes on to set up several examples of what righteousness looks like. The emphasis of the Pharisees and the scribes, their total focus was on obeying the law, which meant observing it literally, word for word. So Jesus, being a good teacher, begins his teaching with what is strictly required by the law of Moses and the Ten Commandments. He's meeting them where they are. What does he say? He says this, "You have heard that it was said to your ancestors, 'You shall not kill.'" Right? That was the law. It was clear cut, don't take innocent life. He then says, "You have heard that it was said, 'You shall not commit adultery.'" Here's another crystal clear command, hard to misinterpret. And then finally, he references a third legal point. He says, again, "You have heard that it was said to your ancestors, 'Do not take a false oath, but make good to the Lord all that you vow.'" In other words, don't lie and then try to use God's name, you know, in an oath as a way of backing up your lie. But then, in the passage, Jesus brings forth the deeper meaning of the law. With respect to killing, he says, "But I say to you, whoever's just angry with his brother will be liable to judgment." With respect to infidelity, he says, "But I say to you, everyone who looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart." And with respect to lying, he says, "But I say to you, don't swear at all. Don't take oaths. Just let your yes be yes and your no mean no." What Jesus is pointing out is that the external conformity to the law is not sufficient. The Pharisees followed the commandments, but they were not righteous because they had not internalized the meaning or the spirit of the law. It's not enough to obey the law, Jesus says. God's law must penetrate. It must penetrate the heart so deeply that we choose to live, that we want to live according to its spirit and not merely the letter of the law. So if holiness means being set apart for God, righteousness means actually living that holiness out, not in some forced or formal way, but because you've actually internalized God's law and now truly desire to do the good. Now, of course, holiness and righteousness are supposed to go hand in hand, right? Righteous actions should flow from holiness. Obviously, it's not easy to be a holy person, right? To give yourself, your life, your work, your relationships to God, to put them under his control in order to honor him. But righteousness, wow, that's even harder, I think, because it means not just considering yourself holy in your relationship with God, but actually doing what is right for others and doing what is right and just in the sight of God. And that's harder. It's harder because living morally and acting ethically always involves other people. It's kind of easy, let's be honest, it's kind of easy to be holy when there's no one around, right? When people don't annoy you, get on your last nerve, demand your money, or impose on your time. It's easy to consider yourself holy under those circumstances. But righteousness requires you and equips you to handle all those frustrations with patience and generosity and love. Years ago, when I was first ordained a priest and assigned to my first parish, which was right here at St. Hilary, I went back to my room after a full day of masses on Sunday. It was late at night. I was feeling great and really grateful for my ministry. As I plopped down into my armchair, ready to watch my favorite TV show, I thanked God for the amazing day and all the amazing people of God in our congregation, and for making me one of his holy priests. I was so grateful for my holy life, in fact, that I started to tear up a bit. I was kind of having a moment. Then the phone rang, and I cursed out loud. I got up from my lazy boy, I plodded over to my desk, and I picked up the phone, and on the other end of the line was a parishioner, and he was distraught. His father was in the ICU. His condition was not improving, his brain activity was minimal, and the doctors were recommending that life support should be withdrawn. It would mean certain death. The rest of the family agreed with the doctors, but our parishioner felt that it was the wrong decision. He said, "Father, can you please come to the hospital now? I need you to talk to the doctors and give us some spiritual advice." I hung up the phone. I groaned as I put my priest suit on again, and exhausted from the day, trudged out reluctantly into the cold, dark night to the hospital, now wondering why I had ever become a priest in the first place. I was not in a good frame of mind. See, I was wearing my holy outfit, I was doing my holy job, but in my heart and in my mind, I was not being righteous in that moment because I didn't want to go help this man. Not one of my finer moments. You have been chosen to be both. You have been chosen to be holy, to be set apart, to dedicate your life and everything you do to honor God. From going to church on Sunday, to wearing a crucifix or other religious articles, to setting aside time for prayer and reading in the Bible. But you have also been chosen to be righteous, to live out your holiness, and strive to be a person of moral and spiritual excellence. The Bible says God chose us in Christ before the creation of the world to be holy and blameless in his sight. Blameless in the sense of righteousness. No one, of course, is perfect. No one is truly blameless. But every time you choose kindness and mercy and patience and compassion and understanding and generosity, every time you freely choose the good, you grow in righteousness a little bit. And your call to holiness bears fruit. You know, when your kids are out of control, I know you don't know what I'm talking about, all of you here, but when your kids are out of control, when your spouse is in a bad mood and takes it out on you, when your neighbor feels like your enemy, when members of your small group or whatever are gossiping and getting on your nerves, when your family or friends or coworkers or parishioners act as if they don't appreciate you, and in the midst of all that, you still choose love, you still choose to do the good, then you grow a little bit more. You grow gradually in righteousness, and you begin to live out your call to holiness more fully. We are not chosen because of our own perfection or inherent righteousness. That would just make us self-righteous, and no one wants that. Rather, we are chosen because Christ was utterly blameless. He was perfectly righteous and completely holy. He is the true chosen one of God. And it's only because of him, only because his holiness and his righteousness cover our own shortcomings, that we too can grow to be both holy and righteous in God's sight. And it's the perfect holiness and righteousness of Christ, his perfect love for God and neighbor, that can and will change us too. Hold up on that last slide. I want to tell you that I went out that night not being very righteous. I got home at 2 a.m. But it was a blessed experience. That parishioner and I are still friends today. And I have to tell you that I grew just a little bit in my righteousness that night. Even though I didn't want to do it, it was blessed. And I was honored to be there. Every time you choose the good, when you don't want to, you grow in that righteousness. And you bear fruit for the world with your holiness.